Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Interesting just to see how the East is going to pair out at the end.
Yeah, it's just been fascinating. Bubble basketball, for whatever reason, there's a lot of theories. It's been tremendous. Yesterday was the first day of the bubble where all the games weren't fantastic. There were some decent games, but it's been so competitive for whatever reason. You know who else is competitive right now? Those San Francisco Giants knocking off the Rockies last night in the House of Horrors known as Coors Field. We had a Brandon Belt sighting, and here's what it sounded like. This clip courtesy of NBC Sports Bay Area. Brandon Belt with a big home run.
Belt hits a high drive to right. Blackman back or Mick DeTapia out of here. And the Giants take the lead.
And Dibs, the Giants did it the old-fashioned way last night. This is the first time since 01. That's 1901, not 2001. First time since 01 they had zero starter wins in the first 12 games. And then last night you had Logan Webb getting the victory. Yay.
Yeah, it's big. It's one-fifth of the way through the year, and you finally got yourself a starter to go out there and get the win. You know, under Bochy, you knew it was going to be Lincecum, and he's going to go out there and give you at least 100 pitches, and then Kane, and then Madison Bumgarner. I'll say it. He's a horse. You knew he would go out there and get you as deep as you needed to get. And nowadays, as soon as you get a couple runners on the second time through the order, and you're the starting pitcher, you got to be glancing out to the bullpen thinking, geez, How tight is this leash? It's not even a leash. It's like two links of chain. You're connected to your owner's hip. You got no room to move.
I think the two, when you're talking about just the starting pitching and how it works out for the Giants, and that's one of the things, guys, that gives me a little bit more hope about this, you know, the team. You look at a guy, you know, like Johnny Cueto, and you think, okay, how long is this going to last? Don't you think that this guy is going to get at least, you know, at 60s, you know, he's going to pitch, what, 15 during this season, this you know, every 5 days, where it may be? What, he's get you three wins? If you look at that, you think, okay, something's got to give. He's already had two outings and, you know, two losses. So you just hope and you think that, hey, he's going to get better. We had on Javi Lopez, and he talked about, hey, Johnny's a pro. I think Johnny's going to get better. I think Johnny's going to get in the groove. He believes that, and I believe that. I think that Johnny is going to pitch better. I do believe that Johnny's better years are behind him. I get that. But I think that you are going to get some games that Johnny gets you some, you know, gets you in the seventh, you know, inning, and, you know, only needs two guys to come in there, two relievers to finish it out. So I think this Giant team, they should be feeling good about themselves and have optimistic that, hey, look, they're in the hunt. They're one game behind 500. They're in the thick of things. I think that this Giant team should be feeling good about themselves. I think they are holding their heads up and believing that they can make some things happen and continue to make them happen.
Yeah, big game today against the Rockies, a day game, to conclude that series, which is so important because you got the truncated season and you got some good teams in your division if you're the Giants that you're looking up at. By the way, Farhan yesterday was on the afternoon show, 7:30. You'll hear the Farhan interview. He addresses everything from Joey Bart to Kapler to the R word, which he says, we don't use the R word, rebuild. He said, we don't go there. So the Giants kind of trying to rebuild on the fly We'll see how that works out in this strange, strange year. Dibs, I mentioned they did it yesterday the old-fashioned way with a starting pitcher pitching into the sixth. One thing I really appreciate about Logan Webb, as you well know, nowadays the win, the starting pitcher win, has been devalued to a degree by, you know, the mathematicians who run baseball. They say, yeah, who cares if the pitcher gets the win? But Logan Webb has talked about how he learned from Posey and Vogt that what you want to pitch a winner. Even if things don't go the way you want to be the winning pitcher. Maddux used to talk about that. He said, there's a lot of things a pitcher can do to help his team win the game. So on the one hand, hey, I do what I do. If I win, whatever. If starters wins they're overvalued. But I love that old school mentality of I'm the starting pitcher and I'm going to do whatever I can for me to get the win and for my team to get the win.
Yeah, and essentially he did absolutely what was necessary, which was go through the order two times. He faced 18 batters, he gave up four hits and didn't walk a guy, which got him through five innings and got him into a position where he could get the win. And you know that they're going to turn over the bullpen, especially with a younger pitcher at that juncture. So he leaves the game with a 3-2 lead, and you're thinking, in this new era of baseball, he's not thinking, okay, I'm going to make sure I get this win, because you're right, wins have been devalued. But when you go five innings and you leave with the lead, it's got to make possibly getting a win even more special nowadays, because you look back to, like, Vita Blue. A lot of times I'll just punch up Vita Blue's stats year after year, and you see him 320 innings, and he goes 22-13, and then the next year it's 294 innings, and he goes 21-9, and every game was a decision for the pitcher. You went out there and you just threw. I'm not saying that that's the way it should return to, but nowadays, when we have to talk about a starting pitcher getting a win as an anomaly, it is just a whole new game of baseball.
I love the fact that the Giants are going back to more traditional ways of handling the pitching staff. They only had one game, and I think Farhan addresses this. They had one game this year where they went to the opener, and we talked about this, right? You don't need to trick it up. I mean, you can't conceal your team's flaws by overthinking it, and I just appreciate the fact that, hey, the starter goes out there, he pitches into the sixth inning, bullpen comes in, does their job. Belt hits a home run, and you win the game. That's not a very advanced formula, but it's a basic formula that still works.
Yeah, and you got Tyler Anderson going today, Lo, and it basically, if you can get four innings from Tyler Anderson here on getaway day, and you can maybe limit your defense to just the one error. I think one error is the new standard.
Yeah.
You got a chance to maybe get the split here, Lo.
Yeah, how do you guys, when you guys are watching baseball, you know, kind of help me out here, when you guys are viewing it, when do you say a guy should get the hook? If you see no control, but he's not giving up runs, how is it viewed? Is it just the pitch count? What are some of the things that you guys think that it's based upon, Dibs, when I'm just talking about just pitching in general? Is it about the pitch count? How do you put it all together and say, huh, this may not be his day. Oh, this may be his day. What are you looking for?
I look for two of the five senses, and I'd throw smell out, and you can go ahead and throw feel out, touch, because I don't have the ability to touch it. But for me, it's about sight. What are you seeing as far as the stuff goes? And it's also the sound. How much loud contact is coming out? Because you might have a pitcher give up back-to-back singles. One of them's a nubber. One of them's a flare to right center. And all of a sudden, we got first and second, nobody out. And you're thinking, okay, those were two fluky hits. Now, if you get a situation where a guy rips one foul and it goes 470, and then he doubles off the left center wall, and then the next guy hits a rocket to third that the third baseman dives and catches, and the next guy hits a frozen rope to second, and you got two outs and a guy on second base, but the last four contacts have all been major barrel jobs, I'd be more likely to want to go to the pen in that situation as opposed to old nubber and tweener. Nubber and tweener, I think, did mornings, Whitey, in Dallas in the 80s, if I'm not mistaken.
They were all right. They were okay. They weren't, everybody. They weren't my cup of tea, but, they were there for quite a while. Lo, there's two numbers I look at that I think I look at them because this is the way managers look at it now. There's two numbers, 103. That is with your starting pitcher. Guy gets up near 100, he passes 100, he's probably coming out of the game. And the other one is three, third time through the order. If the starter has faced the order twice and now it's third time through, Nowadays, managers get really nervous. Oh, they start, they're getting that bullpen ready. As far as the bullpen, you bring the bullpen guys in, it's about, to me, it's still about, you know, righty-lefty matchups, depending on the, you know, who exactly we're talking about. Would you agree with that, Dibs? 103 are your kind of your magic numbers now when it comes to, when does that starter need to come out?
Yeah, I mean, 100 is, you can't even see a guy get to 100 anymore. Maybe once the season, I think 75 is the new 100, quite frankly.
Right,
and,
right. You might be right.
You know, the number for me is, and this is what I talked about yesterday with Logan Webb going in, was 18. Batters faced. It's not as much now pitches thrown as it is, it's not PT, it's BF, Lo, I got to tell you. Batters faced, because you get to that third time through the order, and the pocket protector team, the clipboard, the number guys will tell you that that's when a pitcher is at his most vulnerable. And especially this early on in the season, Lo, it's kind of like, I think what we'll see in football this year with no preseason games, I don't think you're going to see a guy get 26 totes in week one, even Derrick Henry. So you got to kind of ease the pitchers in, and I think you're going to have to ease the running backs in as well.
When you're talking about easing the pitcher in, Dibs, in Whitey, if the pitcher, if he's dealing, if he's, you know, he's going through and you say 18 is your number, but if his pitch count's down, Dibs, and he's freaking been dealing, he's got K's and strikeouts, been hitting, you know, guys, boom, making contact with just right, you know, grounders, and he's able to throw guys out, and he gets through that. He gets through those 18, but his pitch count is down and control's good. Do you still, are you guys still in that same church to say, I don't care, it's three, the third time through, I'm pulling the guy? No, even if he's looking like, hey, he's looking in fuego?
It depends on the pitcher, and I think we saw that with Johnny Cueto the other night where he got a chance to go out there a third time through the order, and it didn't go well. If you're a younger pitcher, one without the same level, as you like to say, Lo, of gravitas, then I don't think you're going to get the opportunity that a Scherzer or a Verlander. If Verlander goes through the order twice and he's dealing, and even if he got touched up a little bit, he's going to get an opportunity to take a third trip through. If you're Logan Webb and you haven't really earned it and you're a younger pitcher, I don't think you're going to get the same sort of opportunity. And, you know, yesterday was perfect. He left with the lead, up 3-2.
Right.
The bullpen picked him up, and you got yourself a W.
Yeah, and I think this discussion comes back around to one of the most interesting discussions about managers. And again, Farhan, bottom of the hour, we got into that a little bit as far as Kapler goes. But we think of managers as the guys that are making all these decisions, who's starting, who's in the lineup, the batting order. That's the way it used to be, and it's just not that way anymore. Managers now, a lot of this is dictated to them. That's just the way it is by the front office, and the front office decisions are driven by analytics. And that's why I think when – I know I've been very critical of the – what is it that Lowe calls the Giants manager, Dibs? He's got that funny
name. I think it's Gaffler.
Gabe Gaffler. Thank you.
Gaffler.
Yeah. He calls him that, and I understand that. But some of these decisions, you wonder, well, how can the Giants feel comfortable with this guy? Well, a lot of these decisions that we think of as being traditional managers' decisions, a guy like Gabe Kapler, any new manager, they don't make those decisions. Those decisions are handed down to them. So it's just totally different. And so it's more important. I think Kapler's job really is now more about what can he do to help the Giants' young players develop, and the in-game strategy that we as fans, especially fans who've been fans for a while, what we focus on. It's just not as important for the manager to have those decisions buttoned up, because a lot of them, he's not the one making them.
So you're pretty much saying just read the book. So you're pretty much telling me that Kapler does nothing but just says, he looks at that piece of paper. I see him pull out that sheet of paper, and he looks at it and says, this is what I've been told to do. But okay, I'm moving this guy. So even in these tight games, when you see a bunch of different hitters, like he's got a DH, he's moving guys in, hitting, pulling guys out, that is off of a paper, or is that off a game situation? Is the paper saying, if this is a score, then you move this guy? If this is here and where, is that? So you guys are telling me his whole game plan is done by Farhan. So Farhan has the whole game plan, Dip, so he's pretty much the coordinator and gives it to his guy and says, okay, call these plays?
No, I think that Farhan obviously has input in the overarching structure, and Farhan interview coming up in 15 minutes. I look forward to hearing the specifics on the actual relationship itself. But basically, Kapler and his assistants will go over the game plan. They'll look at the other team and the tendencies, and they'll figure out who they're going to shift against defensively. They're going to figure out their approach, although so far the approach with Arenado has been, just throw him strikes. And we'll go ahead and let the outfielders deal with it.
But as far as
things like the batting order, for example, and I think today is going to be a great case of this, Lo, because we saw Brandon Belt yesterday go deep and he had a double, but I would bet you he's not in the lineup today because they're facing left-handed Kyle Freeland. So you're going to go with your righty order. Brandon Belt's batting 158 against Freeland in 19 at-bats. Brandon Crawford's batting 118 against Freeland in 17 at-bats. So I would bet you you're going to see the Dubon, you're going to see Flores, you're going to see Longoria. You'll probably see Hunter Pence, who's 5-for-10 against Kyle Freeland. Even though Pence has been god-awful this year, I bet you you see Pence in there in the outfield. You're going to see Darren Ruff. You're going to see Austin Slater. You're going to see Chadwick Tromp. It's going to be team righties thrown out there, even though Belt, you know, he's not hot, but he had a good game yesterday. So it's more about matchups, and it's more about what the analytics say than it is about, I'm feeling Pablo here in a pinch hit role. That's not the way it's going to go.
Not playing the hunches.
They may pinch hit Brandon. But Dibs, to your point, is that when afterwards, is that like in the seventh or sixth inning
absolutely
when they take the pitcher? Now put him in as a pinch hitter? That may
happen? Yeah, if they go with a right-hander out of the pen, and you've got, let's just say you've got Darren Ruff up, who's a righty, absolutely you're going to pinch hit Brandon Belt. And I would bet that Brandon Belt is your first pinch hitter off the bench as a lefty as soon as they go to a righty.
12 o'clock. I'm watching Dibs. Look at Dibs. Yeah. This is Mick putting in the cup plays. I'm loving this, Dibbers. Break it down, baby. You're on fire.
Dibs, I don't know about you, but when I talk about all that, and you know, they use algorithms now to help determine lineups. I don't mean that as a criticism, like, oh, it's better in the old days. But it is an observation. That is the way it is. And one of the things that makes Gabe Kapler the right guy for the job for the Giants right now is he and Farhan are on the same page. So when Farhan says this is what the numbers say about what we should do today, he knows, having been working with Kapler before in the Dodger organization, that Kapler's on board with all of that.
Right, and the whole thing is built upon the way Farhan has built the roster, which is a lefty and a righty in every position. Who was the president with a chicken in every pot? Was that John Tyler? Why do you remember back when he ran for president back in the 1800s? But there's a chicken in every pot. And in this case, it's a lefty and a righty at every position. That way, no matter what they throw at you, you're ready to go from that standpoint. And, you know, I think when you look at the right-handed lineup, Evan Longoria with one home run against Freeland. Donovan Solano, low. He's got a couple of homers. Ooh. He's 3-for-5 with two bomb skis. So go ahead and put Donovan Solano in your homer pool for today.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah. I'm doing it.
That was Herbert Hoover, Dibs. Apparently, Herbert
Thank
Hoover
you.
Was a chicken in every pot. Look at Tampa Bay. Look what Tampa Bay did with platooning all over the diamond. Tampa Bay for years, like, who are these guys? Oh, they're in the postseason again. So it can work, and it also makes a lot of sense when you're trying to keep your costs down and kind of rebuild things. The Giants, how far they're able to get, though, is going to be determined by what they get out of their starting pitchers. It's too bad Smiley got hurt. Logan Webb pitched well yesterday. I like the guy who's pitching today. He used to play for the Rockies. He's got a lot of experience there, the lefty, Anderson. So I don't know, this will be a big win. If the Giants are going to do anything, these early season games so crucial, especially when they've got a tough part of the schedule coming right up here.
Yeah. The trip down to L.A. and, you know, taking on a Dodger team that is playing a little bit better than they were in the last two games of that opening set. But, Lo, if you could somehow eke out a split in Colorado today, that would be huge as you continue on this road trip down to L.A.
It really would. I mean, if you could eke out a split, and if you think about what that would mean, you eked out a split with L.A., the Dodgers, and then you eke out one with Colorado, two of the better teams. You look at how you do it with the Padres. If you look at what they've been able to do, this can be huge. You find a way now. I'm telling you right now, you're going to be getting L.A.'s best. So meaning that L.A. is not going to have a letdown. So it is a huge measuring stick. You win. You find a way to win this one today, and now you head down to L.A., and L.A. said, man, they split with us. These guys, they want to stick it to the Giants. This is a very, very – after this game, this is going to be a very, very tough stretch for this team. And if they have any chance of just staying – if they can hover around 500 and even stay maybe a game or two behind 500, I'm happy. I'd be excited, ecstatic. And I think, Whitey, you should too, because of the fact that they've been able to stick their head in there and fight with these big boys. And trust me, they're fighting Giants, and they're giving them everything they can handle.
Yeah, I'm not a Dodger fan. The Dodgers are so good. I don't know if you guys saw how that game ended last night. Dodgers leading San Diego 7-6. with one out, bottom of the ninth. Grisham's on third for San Diego. The tying run, there's a drive to left field. Chris Taylor makes the catch, and then Grisham tries to tag, and he gets thrown out at the plate for an F7-2 game-ending double play. The Dodgers win 7-6. I bring that up because Chris Taylor is one of those guys. Farhan had a huge hand in resuscitating his career. Chris Taylor came up with Seattle. He was a shortstop prospect, and then he just wasn't anymore. He wasn't a prospect. He's like, nah, this guy's no good anymore. Dodgers got him. They brought him in, and he's a star. Chris Taylor's become a star, and that's one of the things that Farhan has done exceedingly well. We talked about, I think, a couple days ago, Max Muncy, he did it there, and that's one of the things we talked to him about here in the interview coming up, his knack for finding guys that other organizations have given up on and then helping them revive their careers. Certainly, Mike Yastrzemski and Donovan Solano, Donnie Barrows, two prime examples of that right now with the Giants.
Yeah, and Solano is active in Lowe's homer pool, his homer du jour, as the French might opine, as Donovan Solano's got great splits against Freeland in today's day game. The Yastrzemski story is the one, Whitey, that continues to amaze me. And I'm not yet ready to give him Kurt Warner status, Lowe, but you think about Kurt Warner and how he went from the obscurity of the Arena League via a grocery store to becoming a Hall of Famer. Are there other players that you can think of from your days in football who just kind of popped out of nowhere? Didn't Denver have a couple of those running backs? Mike Anderson, wasn't he a guy, Mike Lowe, Rose, that kind of came on the came on the scene a little bit late?
Yeah. I remember the guy who was delivering mail. Remember in Miami? I forgot his name. Running back in Miami was working the UPS and came in and ended up having a Pro Bowl type of year. Text line, hit the text line 9555 and let me know who that particular running back was for Miami. And then there's guys that just didn't get drafted, Dibs, that came out of nowhere and you like end up having Hall of Fame careers. Antonio Gates. Played basketball at COS, you know, go to Kent State, you know, D2 school, and end up playing pretty well and not playing football at all in college and end up being an all-pro for the Chargers. So there is those guys. There is those guys.
Yeah. So we have Farhan coming up here, bottom of the hour, his interview from yesterday on the afternoon show. Real quickly, I wanted to see what you guys thought of this, Dibs. There's something wrong about this. Nothing against Pujols. Pujols is one home run shy of tying the great Willie Mays. And I know Willie Mays played, you know, the 50s and the 60s. So Pujols at 559, one more home run, and he ties the great Willie Mays. Yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you. 659.
No, you're good.
Thank you for the
you're
correction. Good. Yeah. But to me, there's just no comparison. Again, nothing against Pujols. That's tremendous, and he's had a great career. He's a Hall of Famer. But there's just something about, to me, Pujols, you're comparing him to Willie Mays? Yeah, I know he's probably going to pass him in home runs, but you can't compare Pujols to Willie Mays. There's something about that that offends me.
It's because Willie Mays was one of the most majestic athletes in any sport of all time. And it's not to say that Albert Pujols isn't an elite hitter. He's one of the greatest hitters in modern baseball. He's an absolute masher, but you could close your eyes and try to imagine the best defensive play that Albert Pujols ever made, and it's probably when he had to stretch out for a throw to complete a putout on a bang bang play at first. But I mean, I'm just keeping it real, Lowe, and that's when Whitey was making the comparison, and I saw it yesterday when he was one shy of Willie Mays, and I thought,
yeah,
man, I hope he doesn't pass him. Of course,
he's going to
he's got 45 games plus whatever career he decides he has left. But to me, I just bristle a little bit. I'm kind of with Whitey on that one, Lowe.
Yeah, it is, because the way Mays went about doing it and what he stood for and all the different things in the time and the era in which he was a dancing guy on the field, the things that how athletic and how, you know, he in motion, you get to see what he was able to do. It is. It's tough to see this happen. And the guy was Parmalee. That's the running back that I was thinking about, nice. Whitey. Parmalee from Miami Dolphins. Knew it was going to come. Thank you. Shout out to the text line. Shout out, Steven, for giving that. But, it's tough. You know, certain records you just look at and you're like, man, it doesn't seem right if it's being broken, and that's happened to be one of those records.
Yeah, and he is going to pass Willie Mays, but you just can't compare the two. Nothing. Pujols had a great, great, great career, right? No doubt.
Great person, too. Does a lot of great things in the community. He's got events and things that he does and helping the disabled. So he's an awesome, awesome individual, great person, guy who pays back, gives back. But it's still just different because Willie, what Willie stood for too, and how Willie played the game. So it's tough, but it's going to happen, guys. Nothing we can do about it.
All right. Yes. The Farhan interview is coming up bottom of the hour here. Yesterday we talked to Farhan Zaidi. We also talked a little bit about what's going on in Sacramento. We suggested yesterday on the afternoon show that what's going on in Sacramento with the guys who aren't with the big club is just a bunch of glorified grab ass. Of course, we have no way of knowing what's going on. But we'll find out. Farhan's going to address that a little bit and talk about what exactly Joey Bart is doing. That's coming up. By the way, you mentioned, Dibs, that Lowe has, he has Solano in today's home run pool. Can I have Solano in today's error pool? Is that a thing I can do? Because I would like to lock that in.
Yeah, let's go ahead and lock that in. We're going to have two pools running. We got the homer pool and we got the error pool. So you're going Solano on the error pool. I love that. Lock it in. I would go with Heinemann if he was going to be in there just because he's a catcher's interference waiting to happen. But you know, I'm gonna go with Wilmer Flores today in the air pool. He's got one homer. He's hitting .308 against Freeland. I believe he'll be in there.
Yeah.
Go ahead and give me Wilmer Flores. Lock it up, Steven, in the EP.
Yeah, that's a good call too. Coming up, yeah, from Joey Bart to Kapler, Farhan explains everything. He was on the afternoon show yesterday. We're going to replay that for you. Coming right up on the 95.7 Morning Show, Whitey Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. And that will be brought to you by... Who is this brought to you by, Steven? I'm sorry.
Oh, we got a flag
Fix
on the play.
Auto. Yeah, I don't know. Oh, okay. Pardon me. Yeah, that's brought to you by Fix Auto Collision Centers. A traffic accident can be a real headache, so let Fix Auto Collision Centers help. Fix Auto has locations throughout the Bay Area. Call 1-800-INFO-FIX to find the location nearest you. Fix Auto, the first words that should come to mind after an accident.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Thanks for listening to the 95.7 Morning Show. Whitey Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Yesterday, Farhan Zaidi made his first appearance on the 95.7 airwaves. He was on with Damon Radokolsky. I happened to be in for Damon yesterday. And asked Farhan about his knack for finding diamonds in the rough. Going to replay the interview for you now. Tremendous interview, wide-ranging, everything from Joey Bart to home runs at Oracle Park to Gabe Kapler. So I asked Farhan about his ability to find some of these players like Taylor and Muncy with the Dodgers, Yaz and Solano here. So the interview begins with me asking Farhan, how do you find these players? How do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, thanks for having me. It's great to be on with you guys. But, you know, when you look at some of those players, I think what it demonstrates is there's really a pretty thin line between guys that have really productive minor league careers and guys that make the jump to the big league level and wind up going on to successful big league careers. And, you know, so much of it is what guys do right when they come up. I mean, do they have success right away? Do they struggle? And then maybe they get sent down and don't get another opportunity. So, you know, for guys like that, I think as much as anything, it's important to have a clubhouse, a coaching staff, and a manager who will be supportive of young guys and keep running them out there and giving them opportunities even if they aren't proven. So, you know, guys like Solano and Yaz had been really good players in the minor leagues, and Poach and the staff last year did a great job of giving those guys opportunities, and it's been great to see them build on it this year. But, you know, I think there's a lot of guys that, you know, there's only so many spots in the big leagues, and, you know, sometimes, you know, there are players that you know, can make that jump. It's just about giving them the opportunity.
Do you want to do the Joey Bart stuff now or wait till the end?
Well, I'm always ready for it, so it's totally up to you, Ray.
Well, I'll just get rid of it so I don't have to confront it later. What exactly is he doing down at Sacramento, and what is he showing you down there that sort of convinces you that now is not the time yet to bring him up, that you need to see more from him down in Sacramento, which I admit is not optimal circumstances, but it's the best you've got.
Right.
Just fill that picture out for us.
Yeah. I mean, we went into spring training this year, and I mean a spring training like the actual spring training, not whatever happened over the last month. But, you know, thinking this is a guy who we're very high on as an organization, but who has had less than 100 at-bats above A ball, you know, not nothing, you know, to do with his, you know, not his own fault. A lot of it was a couple of unfortunate injuries he had last year. But we felt very strongly that he's a guy who needed more minor league reps. I mean, the ability to handle major league pitching on a day-in, day-out basis is a huge challenge, and a lot of guys get rushed and struggled, and they never get over that hump. So for somebody like him, who's so important to the future of this organization, we want to make sure that we push the button at the right time. And for us collectively, you know, less than 100 at-bats above A-ball, I mean, there are very few cases of guys that make that jump and just come up to the big leagues and hit the ground running. So to your point, you know, there isn't a minor league season right now, but we feel really good about the setup we have in Sacramento. If you look at the pitchers that we have there, they're all basically major league depth. We have some quality depth in the organization, and he's getting to face those pitchers on a day-in, day-out basis. And frankly, however people want to describe the alternate sites that we have, you know, Joey Bart until now has never even faced that kind of AAA major league quality pitching on a day-in, day-out basis. So we're watching his at-bats very carefully. As has been reported, he's working out at first base as well. And that additional bit of defensive versatility is going to help us get him in the lineup as well. So those are all kind of continuing parts of his development, and we're continuing to evaluate it. We haven't, you know, set timelines, either saying we can't do it until X date or we have to do it by a certain date. We're just continuing to evaluate it, and the reports out of there have been really good so far on what he's done.
What about the decision might have been impacted had Buster Posey not opted out? Were there things that he could have learned in a major league dugout, even if it didn't mean you wanted to expose him to a lot of major league pitching?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could go both ways. On the one hand, you know, that kind of apprenticeship, you know, being with Buster on the team would have a lot of value. But, you know, on the flip side, when Buster did opt out, it created even more opportunity at the catching position. So, you know, I'd say it didn't really impact the decision one way or another. And again, this is driven less by short-term need and more by what's best for the organization overall. And obviously Buster is going to be back next year, so that's a dynamic we can deal with then. You know, the other thing is we've got a couple catchers on the team, Tyler Heidman and Chadwick Tromp, who were really good in AAA last year, have done a nice job swinging the bat for us this year. So I don't want to act like they're not part of this conversation. They've done a nice job for us and worked their way into the picture in terms of our catching depth going forward.
So that brings me, I guess, to another of the questions we have to ask you, which is about the defensive performance, not just of the two guys you just mentioned, although they've both been involved in some of the early mistakes. But in general, this has seemed to be a mistake-prone defensive team. And I guess the first part of my question would be, what do you attribute that to, and what are the ways you go about fixing it? And secondly, do you give any thought to, although clearly a lot of defensive shifting is an organizational philosophy, do you give thought to holding off on some of it until guys seem more comfortable fielding their position under a normal circumstance?
Yeah, it's a fair point. I mean, you know, shifting has become you know, really has really proliferated the game in a way that I don't think people necessarily realize, because you don't always see defensive positioning. But, you know, the defensive players on every team are kind of moving around on every play. And it is one of those things where when it works out and, you know, you see a left-handed hitter hit what seems like a shot into right field and you've got a guy playing short right and he throws him out at first base, I don't think anybody necessarily gives the, you know, the appropriate credit to the shift. But, you know, when guys are maybe lose their footing or you don't turn a double play because of the shift, you know, that becomes more glaring. But every team, including us, has sort of, you know, weighed the pros and cons. And with every shift that you do, there is going to be a cost and benefit. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. But we're just confident that over the long run, we save more outs than we lose by doing it. In terms of the overall defensive performance, I think one thing that has surprised us a little bit is, you know, we're not, you know, the fastest team. I don't expect, and I think collectively we don't expect us to have a ton of range and make a lot of spectacular plays. But we have players who are generally really sound defensively. And so some of the more basic errors that we made, I think, have been very uncharacteristic of the players we have and the careers they've had. So I think that's just something that's going to be cleaned up over time. It's certainly frustrating because it's probably cost us a game or two. And, you know, you don't get games back and a shortened season. It hurts a little more. But, you know, these are fundamentally sound players, and we don't expect those mistakes to continue.
Farhan Zaidi, nice enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. And believe it or not, Farhan, occasionally people will call us and they will text us with comments about your manager, which, you know, happens in baseball, right? But seriously, Gabe Kapler, you know, in Philly made some regrettable moves, had a pitching change mistake he made last week. And so people are really scrutinizing your manager right now. Can you explain to Giants fans and us, in your estimation, what makes Gabe Kapler the right man to manage the Giants right now?
Yeah, he has a challenging job right now because, as we've alluded to a little bit, this is a lineup, a roster, a pitching staff that sort of needs to be managed pretty actively. I mean, we don't have, five workhorses in the rotation. We're going to throw seven innings where, you know, you just hand the ball to your setup man and your closer. He's obviously having to mix and match a lot on the pitching side, on the position player side. We're trying to use the entire roster. We're platooning some. That means pinch hitting some. And when you're a manager and you have to make that many moves, as many moves as our roster kind of behooves right now, every time you make a move, you bring a pinch hitter off the bench. The best pinch hitter in the world is a 350 hitter and is going to make an out more often than he's going to get a hit. So, you're making a lot of 55, 45, 60, 40 bets that get scrutinized. And if they don't work out, it's the onus kind of falls on you. So, he's got to make a lot of acts of commission right now in, managing our team. And as a result, I think, he gets, kind of the burden of those acts of commission in terms of the scrutiny that they create. But again, I look at some of our best wins this season, and they've come from a lot of the decisions that he's made. So, we think this is the way to manage our roster that gives us the best chance to be competitive and win games. And I appreciate that he's willing to pull the trigger and be aggressive with a lot of these moves. So, what happened with going out to try to get Tyler Rogers in that extra inning game last week, I think he owned up to it. It was just a mental screw up. He's been around the game for a long time, had a long career, and he just owned it. There was, it was a tough inning. There was a lot of things going on. I'm sure there was a lot of stuff going on in the dugout, and I just wrote that off as kind of a mental screw up, which he owned up to, and we turned the page.
Farhan, what would you like to see your skipper do better going forward?
I think it's just a matter of him getting comfortable, getting comfortable with kind of the rhythm of, being the manager of the Giants, understanding the media. I think he's got great relationships with the players and, frankly, with people throughout the organization, on the business side of the organization and throughout baseball operations. He's a great connector. So to me, it's just about him continuing to get comfortable and, even though you guys have people calling in on some of his moves, like every major league manager gets on the radio, there's a lot of support for him from our fan base as well, which I think has made him more comfortable and given him more confidence. So I'm just looking forward to seeing him continue to grow in the role.
Let me ask a macro question now. And I know general managers hate the word rebuild to the point where they put teeth marks in their coffee tables when they hear the word. It seems pretty clear that this is a rebuild. And given that the parameters of the word, how far along are you in that rebuild? Are you still at sort of a teardown stage? Are you transitioning to a rebuild? Where are you, in terms of what you what the end goal of what you want the organization to look like is. Where are you, even if you have to put a percentage on it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think about it in terms of the waves of players that we have coming through the farm system. Obviously, Bart, who you were kind enough to ask about very early on this call.
we'll double back on him. Don't worry about that.
He's really close. You know, Ramos is really close. We've gotten to see him somewhere. We're excited about him. And then we've got a wave of players that's, you know, a little behind those guys that, you know, may not hit the big leagues next year that you know, might be looking at 2022 on them. I mean, those timelines can move around. But, you know, we have a wave of talent that we think is probably a year and a half away, including some of the guys that we drafted and acquired over the last year. So, you know, in our position in this market with the expectations of the fans, and appropriately so, given the history of this organization, you know, we're going to go out and try to put together a competitive team every year. You know, Kevin Gausman, Drew Smyly, some of the pitchers that we acquired, you know, bringing Hunter Pence back, and he's got a very specific role on the team and has been a great leader. You know, as we kind of wait for those waves of talent to arrive, we're going to continue to try to supplement the Major League roster and put a competitive product out there. So, look, anytime that you're dealing with an organization like the San Francisco Giants that has the history it has, that has the expectations from the fans that it has, you know, nobody's going to use that, the R word. It's about, you know, trying to get some long-term talent into the picture, but continuing to compete in the interim.
Well, I use the R word and I'll use it again. Everybody brings up, when they're talking about your young players, they bring up the position players. There's a lot less said about the pitchers in the pipeline. Are they further away than the position players, or do you have guys that you are looking at for 2021 to make not just an impact but find a full-time place?
Yeah, it's interesting. I you know, when you look at position players versus pitchers coming through the farm system, you know, with position players, you know, in my view, and I think in the organization's view, it's got to be more of a steady climb. I mean, guys have to, you know, get in, you know, a couple hundred at bats, at least a half season at every level to show proficiency before you kind of continue to move them up. Pitchers can move a lot faster. I mean, you know, you have a guy who, you know, is an A-ball and makes three starts and throws 18 shutout innings and strikes out 25 guys. And you say, okay, this guy's too good for this level. It's a little bit easier for pitchers, I think, to demonstrate dominance in smaller samples than it is for position players. So pitchers have the ability to move more quickly, and, you know, that certainly factors into our thinking as well. I mean, we've got some guys like Sean Jelly, Tristan Beck, who we acquired last year, Seth Corey, who are guys who could be in our rotation in the very near future. I wouldn't even rule out 2021. So there's certainly guys in the pipeline. And, you know, again, with pitchers, you know, you've got injuries, you've got attrition, and you just have more pop-up guys. So there's a little bit more volatility on that side. But we definitely have some guys we're excited about who could make an impact for us next year.
We're obviously all living in weird times right now, Farhan. And I'm wondering, as general manager or president, rather, of the Giants, A, how has just your day-to-day changed with the odd circumstances that we're under? And also, what do you feel like you have to do differently as an evaluator to understand what you're seeing from guys under weird circumstances?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, not being in the office is obviously different. It's something that everybody's dealing with. It's a lot of Zoom calls and a lot of texting. And so, you know, you don't get to have those organic discussions with your staff about player evaluations, you know, trade ideas, you know, what players seem to be coming on in other organizations. So it's a little bit harder to bring everybody together and have a collective picture there. It is interesting on the front of having conversations with other front offices. I know, you know, as we were going through training camp, you know, people were making phone calls almost apologetically, like, "Hey, I don't know when we're allowed to start talking about our needs and surpluses and potential deals that may happen." And obviously everybody's really sensitive to the environment that we're in, not just in baseball and in sports, but in the world as a whole. But those conversations have kind of accelerated over the last week or two. There's been, you know, more connecting with other front offices. There's been, you know, more transactions happening. And I think this is kind of building towards, you know, a pretty traditional trade deadline in a few weeks, which I wouldn't have said a couple of weeks ago. But obviously a lot of that's going to have to depend on, you know, the industry as a whole continuing the positive momentum for the last few days after, you know, a couple of teams, you know, had pretty bad outbreaks. But things are looking better, and hopefully that helps us get through the season successfully.
Farhan Zaidi with us on 95.7 The Game. And Farhan, you guys, obviously the club's on the road right now, but what's going on with your home ballpark? Pardon me, is it turned into a home run haven? What is going on specifically in right field? Do the analytics support what the eye test tells us, which is there's a jet stream or the ball's jumping out to right field like it never did before?
Yeah, and, you know, it goes back to, you know, our home and home against the A's, you know, right before the regular season started. Think about that ball that Chad Pinder hit that looked like a routine fly ball that just kind of kept carrying and carrying, wound up going for a triple. And, you know, we've continued to see that. So I know people have talked about, you know, the fact that, you know, that the ventilation has changed, you know, with you know, the air not kind of coming through the gates. And and that seems to have really increased the flight of the ball out that way. You know, left field, the ball is carrying well. What surprised me a little bit is in center field where, you know, the fence was moved in, you know, anywhere from 5 to 8 feet with the bullpens out there. We haven't really seen a lot more home runs out to that part of the park. So I don't know whether, you know, some of the changes in the ballpark dynamic have, you know, been counteracted by, you know, wind patterns that are holding balls up more to that part of the park, but I expected that we'd see more home runs to straightaway center and maybe some balls that we expected to be caught that just kept carrying and going over the fence, but we haven't really seen that. So we're still figuring this all out. And, you know, we talked about, you know, put the bullpens out there, and part of the fun of it is going to be figuring out how the park is going to play differently, and I don't really have the answer to that right now. It's been fun and interesting to see, and we'll just continue to play it out and, you know, have more answers soon.
Farhan Zaidi, the Giants president of baseball operations, yesterday with Damon Radokolsky on 95.7 The Game, Farhan's first visit to the 95.7 airwaves. Let me start there with you, Dibs, talking about the ballpark oracle and balls seemingly flying out of there, at least to right field. I believe of those of us currently on the panel, you're the only one who's actually batted. You're the only one who's actually been in the batter's box in that park, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know. To your eye, is that place now, has it become a homer haven?
Yeah, absolutely, Whitey. And when you have the pop that I have, and
yeah.
I could have used the entire archways all closed. I could have used a hermetically sealed dome. I needed balls from the humidor. Actually, I needed actual golf balls to have a chance to muscle one out of there, because when you stand in there, and I faced the tough right-hander, Bill Lasky. Oh, boy, can he still bring it. He's in there throwing me curves, by the way. I'm trying to take batting practice. I'm trying
Come
to lock
on,
in.
Lasky.
The guy's flipping deuces at me, but that's a story for another day. First of all, I'm using an aluminum bat low, and I barrel one up, and I got that one good. And it's like 20 feet short of the warning track and left. I hit it about 265. It's like, how do these guys do it? I'm using an aluminum bat. And I'm, you know, trying to swing out of my shoes. I got to tell you.
Right.
You've done it, though, haven't you, Loa? You've taken BP, or was that over
no,
the collie?
No, never. At the collie, but not where you're at, baby. You did it at the Giants, you know, place. But you're right. I mean, I've been taking some cuts at the ball, and it's so hard to hit it out. I mean, the talent, the eye and hand coordination, the hours of being hitting balls and understanding how to get it, the trajectory to get it to go, the launch angles, how these guys are able to just do that in their sleep is just amazing, Whitey. But the ballpark's it's a hitter friendly park, and who would have thought that particular place was?
Yeah, and obviously that is something that Farhan has to figure out going forward, because you'd like to tailor your team to your stadium to a degree, but obviously a lot more to chew on in that chat we had yesterday with Farhan. Interesting what he had to say about Gabe Kapler, and he said, you know, there is a lot of fan support. Is there What do you guys think? Is there a lot of Giant fan support for Gabe Kapler right now? I'm sure there's some, but I'm not seeing a lot.
Right, there is definitely some, and yesterday we got some texts on both sides of the aisle as far as, you know, give Kapler some more time, give Kapler a chance, and because you look at some of the mistakes that they're making, and we were talking about Alex Dickerson in right field, unable to make that play, he's a left fielder playing right field. Is it the player who should be able to make the play at this level, or is it the manager putting him in the position to fail? And so it just depends on how you look at it. Two things can be equally true, as I borrow again from the late Ralph Barbieri, but
rest in peace.
You look at the situation with the manager, and you mentioned it earlier. It's easy to always blame the manager if you shift and the shift gets beaten. It's like, come on, Kapler, what are you doing? Why are you shifting? Yeah. And if he hits into the shift, somehow we blame the batter. We don't credit Kapler and Farhan Zaidi for an accurate shift. So it just depends on how you want to look at things.
You're right, Lo? And I think we are guys, and we are people that are quick to nature that just. We want to point out the bad because that just makes us feel better about ourselves. And we always want to do it after the fact. And I thought that, you know, when you listen to Farhan and some of the things that he said, it was, you know, his point that you hear him speaking is, hey, look, I understand that our skipper has made mistakes, but I do want to give him a chance. And I understand also that he's learning the players. It's on the job training as well, learning who the different players is. This is a lot of these guys he doesn't know. So he's got to get to know these guys and how they're going to perform and what level they're going to perform at. And you just hear him going through this, you know, and they ask the question about, what about some of the errors? And he said, hey, some of these guys that, you know what, they usually make that. It's a routine catch for some of these individuals. And he goes, but, you know, it doesn't work out. And he said it cost us several ball games. I thought that was pretty interesting that he even alluded to and pointed out that this team should have won maybe two or three more games. And just by a simple little mistake. So when you look at it like that, and I know we always talk about football's a game of inches, and so is baseball, game of a shifter, you know, game of an inches and making the right catch. I mean, you put three more wins on this team, you know what? Now you're looking at this team having 9 wins, we're talking about being 9-4. So you're very, very, it's this, we could be easily sitting here at 9-4 and you guys are thinking, my goodness, how good is this team? They're right in the thick of things. Yes, they're getting ready to play they got a tough schedule ahead of them, but they have played some tough teams. So does it get much tougher? I don't think so. I think the biggest thing, can they stay consistent? Not only can they stay mentally engaged, because you're not a good enough team that you can make a bunch of mistakes and overcome. And that's what Dibs and all of us have been talking about, mistakes on this particular team.
In all fairness, it's really not fair to Gabe Kapler to compare him to Boach. And we, as baseball fans in the Bay Area, how spoiled have we been since 2011? We've had Bob Melvin and Bruce Bochy, two absolutely outstanding, two truly great managers. So Boach, you know, he learned from some mistakes he made early in his managerial career. So in a sense, it's not fair to compare Kapler to Boach, at least not yet. I also don't know that it's as vital as we as fans tend to think it is. I'll speak for myself. I don't know if it's as vital as I like to think it is as far as the manager's game-to-game in-game strategies. It's really more about developing players right now. That's where the Giants are. That said, the thing about Kapler that frightens me at times, and we saw it last week with a mistake he made in the 10th inning against San Diego, and you go back to last year in Philadelphia, there have been just a few moments, but there shouldn't be any, but there have been a few moments where it almost looks like the magnitude of the moment causes some kind of brain lock, Dibs. That's the thing. And if it doesn't happen again, great, but it can happen again because it's already happened far too much with him. That's why this, you know, this is what people think of when they think of Gabe Kapler, because he's made already just a series of these mistakes that make you go, I'm not sure that guy knows what he's doing.
Right. And it's called a boneheaded mistake. And what animal is known for eating bones? It's a dog. So as we continue the dog versus
bird brain.
It's a boneheaded mistake. Dogs love bones. We know that. You never seen a bird fly around with a bone in its mouth. No, dogs are the ones who love bones.
Wow. Hence the phrase, stretch. That's a boneheaded stretch right there.
Yes. Boneheaded mistakes. And you know, you look at these mistakes and you don't see them from any other manager in Major League Baseball. So that to me is glaring, and it's also galling. And part of what you said about a manager is player improvement. Let's see how these young players improve. So far, we've seen Tyler Heineman and catcher's interference being a problem. Let's see if he and his staff can rectify that. And the other thing is communication, communicating with your pitchers. Johnny Cueto kind of complained that he got pulled early, first time he's seen it in 12 years. So next time out, Cueto gets more leash and Cueto gets lit up. So is Gabe Kapler going to be consistent?
Now, wait a minute. Did he get lit up, though, Dibs? Did he get lit up? He had the ground ball that should have, we talked about the shift. You said, hey, look, you don't get the credit for the shifts when he shouldn't do it and when they don't. And you said, okay, this is that one where probably shouldn't have. But when it does work, you just alluded to that we don't give him credit. Okay, it didn't work. So he gave up a single. Then, you know, and then, you know, his mind's not right. Was in, you know, he's thinking about
there we go. An excuse. You're putting yourself in Johnny Cueto's mind?
Not
you're
excuse,
a mind reader. Is that what you're doing?
No. I'm saying do you trust who was the general manager that comes on the show that Bobby Evans? Bobby Evans said the same thing. Bobby Evans said sometimes players have to let it go and trust the process even though they don't understand the narrative behind it. Sometimes they got to just get out of the way, because if they don't, it can lead to destruction. Pretty much paraphrasing what Bobby Evans, that came on this show, who's a GM who's been there at a manager position, and that was what he said, and he was alluding to what happened with Johnny Cueto. So I don't know if he got lit up, but my the point that you're making about, is this guy a good skipper? I don't know yet. I don't know if it's fair. And yes, he's shown some things, but by him walking out there and understanding his pitching coach already went out there, was the damage already done? Were they going to win that game? Are you just saying, hey, look, he can't do that in a big game situation? So you would like to see him not be in that situation again? What are some of the things, you know, not moving? What are some of the things that just stick out and say, this can't happen. This is solely on him that they lost the game, Dibs.
Oh, just a minute, Dibs, if I may. I want to remind everyone that you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Got the 95.7 Morning Show, Whitey, Lowe, and Dibs. Coz is back tomorrow. We just heard the interview from yesterday.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.